This is DW News, and these are our top stories. Scientists are racing to assess the threat from the new coronavirus variant Omicron. Cases have surfaced in several countries, including Germany and Australia. Dutch authorities have also confirmed 13 Omicron infections among airline passengers who arrived from South Africa, which first sounded the alarm. Israel has closed its border to foreign travelers for 2 weeks. Swiss voters have approved the government's pandemic response plan by a clear majority in a referendum. It requires proof of COVID-19 vaccination, recovery, or a negative test to enter bars, restaurants, and public events. The measure also provides billions of Swiss francs in aid for workers and businesses hit by the pandemic. Final results show that 62% of voters supported the legislation. France, Belgium, and the Netherlands and Germany have agreed to take more measures to fight migrant trafficking across the English Channel. Among them, a surveillance plane by the EU border agency Frontex to monitor the French coastline. This year, almost 26,000 people have attempted to cross over to the UK from France. This is DW News from Berlin. You can get more on our website. That's dw.com.
Hello and welcome to this Berlin special edition of Check-In. Millions of tourists visit the German capital every year. They're not only attracted to the many sites and museums, but also to the relics that commemorate recent German history. Our reporters take you on a journey through time that begins in Berlin during the 1920s, then on to the Second World War, and concluding with a decade when Berlin was divided by the war. First, Lukas Steger immerses himself in a dazzling era. The so-called Golden Twenties were a period of upheaval in fashion, nightlife, architecture, and film.
Berlin has changed again and again over the decades, but the 1920s are still visible in the urban landscape. We're about to find out more by going on an architectural tour. Hi, I'm Lukas.
Hi, I'm Arne. Welcome to Alexanderplatz.
Thank you. I see that you've got the right clothes on, 20 style.
I tried as much as the weather would allow. So, we're starting on Alexanderplatz, perhaps the most lively, if not most popular square in the city. In the 1920s, it was the center of urban life, of the chaos, traffic and building sites. And that hasn't changed that much today. There was an attempt to bring some order to the chaos at the end of the 1920s. There was a huge construction site, and these two buildings by the architect Peter Behrens are the result. Straight lines, no thrills. Typical new objectivity architecture. In the 20s, there was a roof terrace on this building. You could have a coffee while looking out onto Berlin.
Much of Berlin's subway system dates back to this time as well, including the famous Alexanderplatz station.
At the end of the 1920s, this was one of the biggest construction sites in Berlin. Two subway lines were built, the U5 and the U8. We can see two things here. One of them is the color. The architect Alfred Grenander had a genius idea, color codes. Each station had a different color, and he came up with these tiles. You see this turquoise green everywhere at Alexanderplatz. That's the first thing. The second thing is that everything is cramped, almost oppressive. But he managed to make something sublime with these lighting blocks.
This idea was a world first. It was later picked up in other cities. The 1920s were also a cinema decade. And you can find out all about it at the German Kinemathek. One of the stars of the silent film era was Asta Nielsen. There are also posters and extracts of films by directors such as Friedrich Murnau, who made the expressionist classic The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. Film legend Marlene Dietrich launched her film career in the 1920s. There's documentary footage of the Weimar Republic too. And scenes from Fritz Lang's early sci-fi classic, Metropolis. I found out even more about Weimar cinema from Nils Warnecke.
Herr Warnecke.
Mr. Warnecke, Berlin became a film city in the 1920s. What did this mean for the population?
You have to imagine Berlin after the First World War. There were two things happening at the same time. The Weimar Republic meant democracy and freedom, the emancipation of women. There was an upheaval in society. There was an explosion of the arts and cinema that went from one technical innovation to the next. This peaked at the end of the 20s with the arrival of sound. You can imagine how interesting this must have been for the film industry.
With its theaters and dance halls, bars and pubs, Berlin's nightlife was legendary in the 1920s. It drew people from all over the world. Berlin's Wintergarten Theater in the Tiergarten District produced a show called Golden Years to celebrate its anniversary in 2020. Razzle, dazzle and raunchiness. That's what was on stage in Berlin 100 years ago. Berlin's Barn Quarter in the Mitte District is now very fashionable and expensive. Back in the 1920s, it was pretty squalid and run down, but famous for its dive bars. And one of the cult drinks was absinthe. The highly alcoholic drink became very popular with artists and writers in 19th century France. Nicknamed the Green Fairy because of its color, it was also notorious for leading to erratic and violent behavior. Germany banned it in 1923. It's better to dilute it with water. It smells a little of anise, is that right?
Yes, exactly. There is anise in absinthe, which is made from wormwood, but because it's extremely bitter, anise is added for sweetness, without needing to resort to sugar or the like.
But a spoonful of sugar does make it easier to digest.
Vielen Dank.
Thank you. Shall I go ahead? How is it supposed to be drunk?
Slowly. It's a slow drink.
I tend to be careful with alcohol anyway. I was expecting it to be stronger.
That's because there's water. But this one is weak. Only 55%. So about 15% with water.
Absinthe has only been legal again in Germany since 1998.
The Roaring Twenties and their afterglow abruptly ended when the Nazis came to power in 1933. A lot of artists left the country. The films were censored and the ballrooms were closed. Well, what's left of that is a memory of an exciting time in which so much was possible. And of course, good music, art, fashion, and movies.
The next historical chapter in this check-in special is World War II. Lukas Steger leaves Berlin in 1939 and returns there in 1945, where he sets out to answer the question, What places still memorialize that horrific era? The victims and the perpetrators, the victors and the vanquished.
The Reichstag in Berlin houses Germany's parliament. The building is steeped in history. In 1945, one of the last great battles of World War II raged here. That was 75 years ago, but even today, the city is still full of reminders. I'm meeting the Bundestag's historian Michael Feldkamp. First, he shows me the library with all the minutes of the Bundestag from 1949 to the present day. On these tables, the ballots are counted after each vote. This painting is dedicated to German history, and it doesn't gloss over the Nazi period. What significance did this building have in the Nazi era?
In essence, none. After the Reichstag fire in February 1933, the building could no longer be used for anything official, even though the fire only damaged the interior of the Chamber of Deputies. The side wings, like the one we're in now, were still in working order, and exhibitions were held in them. Then, in the very last phase of the Second World War, a maternity ward was set up down here, so babies were actually born here.
The Reichstag building might not have had much significance for the Nazis, but the Soviet Union saw it as the most important symbol of Nazi Germany.
Just imagine, after the Battle of Stalingrad, Joseph Stalin had a slogan painted on all his missiles in white paint. For the Reichstag.
Traces of the war can still be seen today. After the victory, the Soviet soldiers immortalized themselves with graffiti on the walls, usually with the date, the city the soldier came from, and their own name.
And here, in this box, you see a message. It says, "For Leningrad, you have paid in full."
In their graffiti, the Soviet soldiers referred to the Reichstag building as Hitler's lair. But the dictator had sought refuge in a different building. Located near Brandenburg Gate on Wilhelmstraße, an air raid shelter called the Führerbunker had been built underneath the garden of the old Reich Chancellery. This is where Hitler committed suicide on April 30, 1945. Only an information board stands here to mark the site. The bunker was partly demolished after the war, the rest was buried. My next stop is the topography of terror. With over a million visitors a year, it's one of the best-known places of remembrance in Berlin. The documentation center informs and educates visitors about perpetrators, the people behind the Nazis' regime of power and terror. Florian Kemmelmeier shows me around. Could you briefly explain what I see here?
This is a model of the German Reich's government district. That's what it was even before the Nazi era. Wilhelmstrasse is where the most important ministries were located. On the spot where we are now, from 1933 on, was the main office of the Prussian secret state police. That was the headquarters of the political police, the Gestapo. The headquarters of the SS, the Schutzstaffel, the security service of the SS, occupied the area where the topography of terror is located now.
Different organizations, but with a single goal, to maintain the Nazis' hold on power.
They fought the resistance and organized deportations. So you could say that here, at this location, the threads all came together of many of the crimes that were committed 1 or 2,000 kilometers away from here.
These here were the perpetrators?
Yes, these were young people, radicals, who were prepared to give everything they had to ensure the success of their movement, and especially Germany's success in the war. They saw themselves as a young radical elite.
als junge radikale Elite.
The exhibition continues.